This is the Palava podcast by me, Francis Kwakupom. I am the founder of Jamjar, a creative agency based in Accra. Through my work across Africa, I have met so many people and realized how important it is to connect and share our experiences with each other. Palava brings the stories people don't hear to life, continuing the tradition of storytelling through conversation. My guests and I will be talking about working, traveling, living, and loving in Africa. Sit back and enjoy the Palava. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Palava podcast. I am here with Bright Akwe today. Whoop whoop. Bright is a satirical artist, if that's what they want to call you. Yes. What do you like to be referred to
as? I just like to be referred to as an artist.
As an artist.
Yes.
Cool. Because
every now and then I'm dabbling in something different. So.
Okay, I want to know what the other things are that you're doing. But do you remember this? And this is more embarrassing for me than for you, but I remember we used to meet quite a lot in different places.
Yeah.
And then I remember there was one day we were at Kempinski and you're like, Francis, do you know how many times I've met you? And I was like, oh my gosh, Bright, I'm so sorry. Because people kept introducing us to each other as though we didn't know each other. And
I think it was your mom.
And then, yeah, my mom especially was like, oh, you know Bright? And I was like, yes, I do know Bright. But it was like we'd been introduced so many times. And sometimes I just couldn't
remember. There was one time when we did a project together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you lived there, but you were on the set.
Yes, you did the drawings. It was Airtel.
Yes.
It was at my office.
That was your office.
Yeah, but you know, I didn't realize that was you.
But I realized.
I think that was the first time
we met. That was the first time we met.
Yeah.
No, that was the first time we saw each other.
We saw each other.
We weren't introduced.
Yes, yes, that's true. Yeah. They didn't introduce us. Yeah, your work was amazing for Airtel. That was really, really cool. But you were doing more like graffiti style.
That's why I'm saying I'm dabbling in.
In lots of different. Do you still do graffiti?
Yeah, once in a while, but right now it's not what's
it's
like.
It's not your main thing.
Yeah. Well, I had a very generic introduction. I think everybody who practices here started off copying cartoons.
Okay.
You know, the influence from the television was very, very strong for everybody. So I came through that channel as well. So,
okay. Because you studied at Kwame Nkrumah.
Yes.
University, and you did fine arts.
Yes.
So were you in the same year as Wolasi?
No, Wolasi wasn't at the Kwame Nkrumah University.
No, he did. He was in Takoradi.
He was in Takoradi.
Yes, yes, yes. He was in Takoradi. But he did fine arts as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so you did it at
KNUST.
What was that like?
It was very, very eye-opening. Before I entered the KNUST, I used to think of art as one thing.
Mm.
You know, I'm gesturing my hand to the left for those who can see us. And then I got in there and I realized art could be this whole other thing. Like a lot of other people too, I was exposed to so many examples and so many possibilities. So you had even more options to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
And you were shown the examples other artists from different parts of the world had done and were doing. And so, you know, you gain more confidence in some of your ideas that you thought were maybe too crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you gain some confidence and you try to.
So what was your first thing out of university? What did you go into? Did you go straight into art or did you start doing other jobs? Have your parents always been like, yeah, you go and be an artist?
No. It was never like that. I used to draw around the house.
Yeah.
When I was in JHS, you know, and for them it was a good thing because they kept me at home. I wasn't out in the streets too many times. And then when I had the chance to go to senior high school, I told my dad I wanted to pursue the visual arts course, and he wasn't so pleased with it. I think because he was very, very concerned about what I could turn out to be, and there weren't so many prospects for anybody who was studying arts. I think currently there are a lot of examples people can point to, but back then there weren't so many. And so he wanted me to choose a path that was quote-unquote guaranteed to work, you know, and you know, we used to have all these back and forth conversations. I had people step in for me and try and speak with him, and then he gave me the chance, and then years later, you know, now he's convinced, so he's like my biggest fan.
Really? Oh, that's good. That's good. So after university, what was sort of the, what did you go into? What was the first thing you sort of did?
So I went into university thinking of art as, you know, as something. Came out thinking of it as something totally different.
So when you say something, as in like a certain way of painting, or
a certain way of expressing yourself. Okay. So if you lived and practiced in Ghana at the time, if you said you were an artist, then it was 9 times out of 10 you were a figurative painter who painted genre scenes in oil on canvas and you showed in a certain kind of gallery. And sold to a certain kind of clientele.
Yep.
And if you did that, then you were considered an artist.
True.
You know. And it's true. When you do that, you can be considered an artist. But there
that's
are
one
so
way
many
of
other
going,
things that you can do. So KNUST exposed
to
me to all those things. And in fact, when I came out, I wasn't satisfied.
Okay.
Because it's like you had seen, you had just begun to see something. So I went back in to see more. And then maybe I saw too much. Oh, I wasn't ready.
That was when you did your master's.
Yes, that was when I did my master's.
And why did you see too much?
I was completely blown away. There's a very beautiful experience there. I'm saying beautiful because I've been through it, so I'm able to speak about it in hindsight. But I like to let me sound a little bit more intelligent than I actually am. But there is this theory that I used to comfort myself about being a seed and knowing your value as a seed, like a grain of rice. You know you can be cooked and you would feed maybe one person. And that is like good value. But you can bury yourself, or you can be buried in the earth, in the dark, scary space, and you die and you decompose and you're afraid. But after a few maybe months of being nurtured properly, you can multiply and become an even, you know,
greater
form of yourself, and probably even feed more people. And you know, so that was what I failed to see at the time. So I was buried into this
master's program.
And I was lost and so confused. But I think that was a beautiful thing, because when I came out, you know, it was about maybe letting go of certain things that I held so rigidly, and letting them go so that I could actually do something that was
interesting. What were you holding on to?
I had certain ideas. Now I don't want to talk about it, but I had certain ideas about the kind of art that I wanted to create.
Okay.
And maybe I wasn't really ready to make that kind of work yet. I needed a lot more learning to be able to do it, and I didn't see it really well at the time. This is a story I've never really told anyone before. So, but you know, when I came out of university for the second time, I had to sort of
let go of
so many things, and then I ended up illustrating. Illustration was something I didn't like doing.
Oh wow!
When I was in school,
So you just were like, let me pick up a pencil and.
It was more like, what do I have available? I have a laptop. I had a graphics tablet.
And did you start that so that you could make money, or did you start it just because you thought, oh, illustration?
I started it because I needed to do something.
Yeah.
I wasn't putting in it. I wasn't creating any work. And one thing I've learned is, if you're an artist and you don't make work, you don't exist. I felt I needed to do something with myself. And then I started illustrating. And then the political thing got into it. And then it became a different project that sort of took me away from everything else. And it's become what people know me for.
You know, and so is that something that are you happy that people sort of know you for that? Or do you feel like you fell into that and now it's just kind of there? Like, how does it make you feel? Because, you know, sometimes you start these projects and then you do them, and then, you know, my mom always says it's like you create a bit of a dragon, and now all of a sudden you have to tame the dragon. And there's always a crucial point at which you're like, oh, I can continue this way, or I can, like, draw back. And so how does it make you feel that people know you for your political statements through your artwork?
I think it was a natural progression, because being influenced by politics was something personally I couldn't dodge.
Yeah.
Because my family, like my dad is deep into the politics.
Oh, wow.
He served in the government,
okay.
One of the previous governments. So he's always like making political commentary at home.
Okay.
He's like the Mr. Know-it-all.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
his
yeah.
opinion is.
And do you guys have solid. Arguments then?
But he never really let us, the children, get involved because
okay.
he saw the rather ugly side of politics. He
okay.
saw how far people were willing to go to sort of defend some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Actions or decisions politicians
yeah.
make. So he never really wanted us to get involved, but yeah. I kept hearing these things.
But did you have conversations or debates, or he didn't want to have them
now
with you?
I have them with him
okay.
because he realized somehow I found my own voice somewhere
yeah.
and now probably people outside of the home sort of consider my opinion on some
okay.
of these things. So
okay. so now he can
and
consider
I'm usually
your...
I'm usually on the opposite side of his opinion,
yeah.
so we have these little debates.
Yeah,
he won't concede
yeah.
to me, but I mean, I know.
But at least you have the
yeah.
conversation.
Yeah, so you know, still we talk.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have one or two conversations about what's going on. He's
mm-hmm.
always cautioning me, you know, don't go into this, or be careful when you talk about this kind of things. Because
so he gives
yeah.
you a bit of the backstory
yeah,
so that you know where you're treading.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it influence you or does it inspire you to actually talk about that topic though?
Oh,
because I know you're
me,
a bit
I'm
of a
always,
rebel.
I'm always collecting all these stories and keeping them probably for later.
Yeah.
Because I like to refer to some things in a certain historical context.
Yeah.
So I'm collecting information all the time.
Yeah.
He knows my views are quite liberal and I'm generally not a supporter of like the whole bipartisan system
yeah.
and where he I know where his allegiance stands
yeah,
because
yeah.
of very very personal
yeah.
experiences so
yeah.
it's like that at home.
Yeah. And so in terms of then people knowing you for that, are you, like you said, you can't really get away from, you weren't able to get away from it, but people knowing you and knowing your opinion, is that something that you're quite comfortable with? I mean, personally, I love your work.
Thanks.
I think you say a lot of things that people want to say.
I am happy with the kind of response that my work generates, or the kind of conversations that it inspires,
mm-hmm.
and the way people are willing to share things with me because they know it would be of benefit to me. Like
mm-hmm.
I call it gossip or research.
Yeah.
Like people are willing to give me like juicy stories that is probably not in the mass consciousness
mm-hmm,
yet,
mm-hmm.
because they will want me to maybe satirize it or put my own spin on it, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. So I take it as part of my like my life project.
Yeah.
But I do other things
yeah.
just for myself, and
yeah.
then I do this. I'm just trying to create.
Yeah.
Anything and everything at the same time.
I remember you telling me a story once, and I think I read it in an interview about the work on China that you did.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I don't know if you can tell us some of those stories
yeah.
around like people's responses to some of the work
that
impact of it, because those are quite interesting.
That China episode was one of the very, very, very positive ones.
Okay.
I'm saying positive because at the time, a lot of other cartoonists or satirists would be very, very cautious about the kind of stories that they painted about. Maybe because they didn't want to offend certain characters in authority, or maybe they thought speaking on certain issues would affect their business, and often that is the case.
The case, yeah.
You know, so for me to make that painting and for it to receive the response that it got was very, very positive, and I'll tell you some of the reasons why. So for those who don't know, what happened was that in 2017 I made a painting detailing some of the transactions between the Ghana government
mm-hmm.
and the Chinese government
mm-hmm.
or the Chinese diplomatic community in
mm-hmm.
Ghana
mm-hmm.
especially when it came to the issue of the small-scale mining
right.
that we all call galamsey
yeah.
in Ghana. And when I shared the work on social media, like I do with most of my work,
mm-hmm.
it went viral, and it got to some of the elements in the Chinese embassy. So the following week, they issued a presser speaking about things going on, and then they spoke about my cartoon. I think at the time, generally, some of the critical media was also speaking about how suddenly the Chinese nationals in Ghana had gone into the small-scale mining industry and were using very huge machines, and the environmental impact was more than you know, we could handle. I think 4 years down the line, everyone can see what is happening, what has happened, what is still happening, and the kind of stories we hear coming from the Ghana Water Company, and all the projections about how probably in the next 5 or 10 years Ghana would have to be importing water for domestic use. I mean, how bizarre is that? Yeah, of all the things that we are already importing that we find so problematic, we have to import water because a few greedy people are looking for gold.
Yeah.
You know, so it's something that even if I wasn't a painter, I don't think I would be comfortable turning a blind eye to, because if you didn't speak about it now, and speaking about it is the least thing you can do.
Yeah,
if you don't speak about it now, it would come back.
And it is still here. Like, you spoke about it 4 years ago,
and it is still happening. It's probably even worse
than
because now people have lost their lives and trying to, you know, do some other kinds of action to try and stop it. So I guess at the point, we just have to sit down and all fold our arms and wait for when we all have to import water.
Oh my gosh, that doesn't sound very...
It's crazy. And then generally the issue of the presence of China on in Ghana and on the continent is a very, very important topic that needs to be looked at and analyzed from all points of view. And at the time, there were a lot of people who were interested in this conversation. So that artwork and the response it's generated gave me certain platforms for me to present even some more of my work to newer audiences, and you know, because the issue of China also needed to be looked at generally.
And it's interesting because Michael Soy also does and his oil on canvas.
Michael Soy is an OG.
He's an OG.
It was very interesting that I actually got to meet and create a project with him. Because he's someone I had heard and read about years prior. So to meet the man in person.
What was it that you did with him exactly? Because you did like a residency. You did like a project together.
Yes, we had a two-man show.
Yeah.
The theme of the show was generally about relationships between governments and businesses and peoples, like from Africa and then from the rest of the world. And especially China.
Is there any recollection of that work? Are there any images of it? Is it anywhere that
What I did was I had some pieces that I created specifically for the show, and then there were also other pieces that I pulled from older series that spoke to the topic.
So if you can tell us a bit about that, like tell us a bit about where you showed and some of the work.
So let me try and recall how that whole thing unfolded. So in 2016, I received the Kwenyehia Prize for Contemporary Ghanaian Art, which was...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Which was one of the most important events in my life still, because I think it really introduced my work to the Ghanaian art-going audience on a different scale than what the internet and social media could do at the time. When I was in school, I got introduced to the work of El Anatri. Living
another
legend.
OG.
I got introduced to his work and just his life and his, you know,
the being, the
God that he is. So in 2016, I submitted some of my work for the Kwenyehia Prize, and then I learned El was the head of the jury.
Amazing.
And as part of the competition, I don't like to call it a competition, but as part of the prize, we had to meet with the jury and present our work, and I met Elle for the first time.
Wow.
And I knew who he was. Yeah. I knew all the other
you must have been
all
just
the
like
artists on the panel, and I was like, oh, nice. I was just happy being able to meet someone like that, and you know, had a conversation about my work. So on the night when I received the prize, still one of the highlights of my life so far, so many things it did for me. Through that, I was also introduced to a woman named Ruka Sanusi.
Yes.
Who did a course with me as part of the prize. Through Ruka, I met Selassie Atadika.
Yep.
Who is an artist I've collaborated with and I'm still collaborating with right now.
Yeah.
A year before all this happened, I met Dr. Joseph Odro Frimpong.
Okay.
Who is a researcher in like Ghanaian popular culture, and he invited me to speak with his class at Ashesi University.
Oh, amazing.
And then he showed me the work of Michael Soy. He introduced me to the work of Michael Soy. A year later, I get to meet and work with Michael Soy.
Yeah.
So I put Odro Frimpong on to curate the show.
Oh, amazing.
And yeah, so it was
a
like
whole full circle,
like it was a series
like,
of dots connecting.
Amazing.
And then the Gallery 1987 agreed to host the show. So they were just hosting the show.
Okay.
So
you and Michael Soy had like worked together to put it together. Oh, nice.
Me and Michael did work together and the gallery hosted it. So Michael actually came to Ghana and lived here for a while. And so we had that exhibition. What the experience was for me was a different kind of exposure. Because I got introduced more directly to some of the dealings of the commercial art spaces in Ghana, and I think it's a model that you can find everywhere else in the world. And
was that like your first time really experiencing a show like that?
I think that was the
first
time. That was the first time I was having a show in a commercial space like that. Because a year before, I participated in one of the there was a series of shows by Black Star Lines from Kumasi, and I was part of those exhibitions at the Museum of Science and Technology.
Yes.
You know, but that show is not...
That's different,
The focus is not commercial as compared to
this
other
one.
So it was my first time, and it was an experience I needed to have because it opened my eye to a lot of things, having to deal with censorship, you know, just dealing with different audiences and how I needed to adapt.
Okay.
You know, so at the end of the day, I could still make my work. And
so do you feel like that work wasn't really the work that you wanted to say?
Well, I don't think working in such commercial spaces is the most ideal for me because of the kind of work that I make. The censorship there was very, very strong.
Certain topics that you couldn't cover?
Yeah, there were certain topics that...
Or certain people you couldn't put in
your... There were certain people
so
I was not allowed to speak about.
Wow.
But like I said, it was a good experience because it meant the next time I wanted to do something like that, then I would know the kind of strategies to use. So for me, every experience,
like
whether
a
positive one or a negative one, it's an opportunity for me to learn.
Yeah,
so
definitely. I mean, and so from that, I mean, this is how many years ago? This is almost
three
years ago.
Yes.
What things that you've been working on next? I think you had a show planned and then COVID kind of hit. You know.
So 2018, we did that. I had my first solo in Cape Town.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, which was rather... rather weird because it's something I would expect that would happen in my home, home country. But then I was also invited to be part of a series of lectures at the Rhodes University.
Okay.
As part of my lecture series, I did my first solo there with a curator named Dr. Rutsin Mao, who is also a researcher into the Africa-China relationship. Like I said, it's something that it's a topic that has been that has become very, very important to a lot of academics, So you have people looking at it from as many angles as possible, because we need to understand what is really going on, and so that we don't repeat certain mistakes that we've made in the past. Also, I think one of the good things is that because of the nature of my work, it's opened the chance for me to present in different kinds of spaces. So I'm not always in the art, strictly art spaces.
Yeah, you can navigate. Yes, I'm like
giving lectures in universities.
What do you talk about? Do you feel like a lecturer when you're in the lecture?
Oh, not a lecture. Well, not a lecturer in a traditional sense, but I like to think that the schools that invite me want a different kind of experience for their students, and they want to speak with practitioners who are on the ground.
Yeah.
That was one of the core motives of the Mellon series of lectures that took me to Cape Town. But aside that, I've been to Ashesi number of times.
So what do you talk to them about your work, or how to do it, how to kind of navigate the space?
I it depends on the kind of class that I'm talking with.
Okay.
If I'm talking with a strictly art making class, then I would focus more on some of the technical aspects of my of my practice.
Yeah.
If I'm speaking with maybe a class like students of anthropology, then I'm probably talking about some of the themes of my work
And the documentation elements. That's so interesting that you had a perspective of your art when you left school, and now it's sort of almost like art is just cut across every single like so many different faculties, so to say, from commercial to, you know, lectures to all sorts of things. And in terms of doing this in Ghana, in the context of Ghana, right? Because, you know, let's be honest, this is not an easy context.
It's not the most ideal situation
to do this in. What's kind of kept you motivated to do it? And what are some of the challenges? I want to hear, I'm sure there's some very funny challenges that you've had to deal with. Just as simple as light off, but I'm sure as an artist, electricity is one of your biggest issues.
I have a series of paintings that I want to make, not digitally, like what people are used to. So I decided to purchase some paint, and I wanted the best kind of paint that my money could buy. So I go online to one very famous supply place called Dick Blick.
Okay.
I think every artist knows
Dick Blick. US?
It's in the US.
Okay.
So I create an account, I load my cart, you know, I make, like, I'm really shopping.
Yeah.
I'm shopping paint, brushes, canvas, mediums. I'm done, about to check out, and it says Visa. Like one of the payment options. I have the
Visa.
I have Visa card. Why not? Put in my details, and it doesn't work. So I thought there was a problem with my card. So I wired money to my sister's account, and I used their card, and it wouldn't work. So I was tempted to call the shop. I don't know about you, but making such phone calls really puts me off.
Yeah.
So I called the shop and I explained the situation to them. Then they said, oh, they have to manually clear the cards for me. So I have to give them those details. And I gave it to them over the phone. And then the lady said to me in a very nice way, oh, I'm sorry, we can't accept your card. And I asked her why, and she said, because it was issued in Ghana. And then she proceeds to ask me if she should delete my order. I said, no, I need the paint. So how do I get it? And then she says, oh, they would accept the card if it's from somewhere else. So I asked her, where? And she said, if it's a card from the US or Canada or anywhere else, they would accept it.
But not Ghana.
But they won't accept it from Ghana. So I asked her if it would be okay for someone else to pay for me. She said, yes, if the person can provide a card from this. I said, cool. I hung up. I call my colleague Girish from Toronto. I explain it to him, and Girish calls the shop and then takes my order number and puts his card on it. And then he calls me back and says he's dealt with it. I shouldn't worry. So I'm happy because I've really been interested in, like, I really want to paint. And then the next day I get an email saying the transaction failed, so I need to send them a receipt for the last transaction on the card and a photo, like a government issued photo ID. So I called Girish and I explained this to him, and he was troubled because he says that should not happen. Anyway, he sends those details over to me, and then I forward it to the shop. Mm. And I told them, okay, so these are the details. Go ahead and process my order. They sent me another email and said they are sorry they can't accept it. You know, there was something like
so double they check, it was fraud?
Triple check. I mean, who steals paint? Of all the things that
which 419 person is going to
who steals paint? So I eventually had to play the race card.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I wrote a very touching email. And I can read it to you, but like it went along the line of, I just want to paint.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The only mistake I made was to live and practice in Ghana.
Yeah.
I made an order, paid for it, and you told me you won't accept my card.
Yeah.
I asked my friend Girish to pay for me.
You still don't
want to accept his card. I guilt tripped them, mm-hmm. And then the next like 5 minutes, the lady writes back and says, they are sorry for any inconvenience caused. They just cleared my order and they processed it to shipping. I was thinking, when I get my hands on this, I'm going to drag them online. I'm going to tag the producer and drag them. And that is actually one of the reasons why I came to town. So from here, I'm going to pick up my stuff.
You're going to pick up your paint?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up my paint.
That is a great story.
So that,
so that we can, now we can do drawings about,
yes, so
about
now,
them.
I think it's one of the things people
this is so crazy.
Even imagine. But just acquiring materials to work with, good materials to work with, it's a hassle, which shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be the case.
No, it shouldn't be the case at all.
Because you're in Ghana.
Just because I live and work here.
But also, it's visa.
It's visa.
So as long as visa is issued in Ghana, you can't tell me that you can't accept a visa. You need to sort this out.
So
not good enough.
That's like one of the things. It's a funny story, but I think it's a good story. If I drag them online next time, the next person wouldn't go.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Imagine if I give up and told them, you know what, cancel my order. That means I can't paint. Because I can't find good materials anywhere here in the country.
Not at the level that you want.
Not at the level that I want.
In terms of what you're producing.
That's, you know, the absence of the infrastructure. Mm. You know, I know several people are putting things in place, but we still need more options.
You mean in terms of galleries?
In terms of galleries, in terms of spaces that will show, instead of institutions that would support the artists, you know,
and so
grant
how do
opportunities.
So what else do you do then? I mean, you lecture and you and you paint, you do your arts, but what do you do in terms of is that enough to get you by in terms of day to day, or what do you do to sort of keep you afloat?
Can I say I sell cocaine on your podcast?
Guys, you can go to Bright.
I do a lot of things. I do commission work sometimes. Okay. I work with ad agencies.
Okay.
And I do.
So you can go commercial. You can go like very non-political and commercial.
Can,
so guys, you can hire Bright.
Yes,
go check out his Instagram.
If you have work that you think my skill set can.
Do you think people, because they see your political artwork, don't think about you in that commercial sense, that they can actually go to you for commercial work?
Yeah, I think it's also because currently I don't really put that kind of information out.
Yeah.
You know, but for those who know, they always know how to find me, and they know the kinds of work.
So
that
do you want
to
keep it like that, or are you wanting people to kind of know?
Right now, I have quite a lot on my plate.
Yeah.
I'm doing a long-term project with my colleague, whose name I mentioned, Girish, and one other colleague called Koredi. We are trying to publish an interesting book.
Nice.
And some of these projects have grants. We apply for grants and then we've received favorable responses. So something like that can sustain you
for a long
time,
period
and then
of time,
you can, you know, because I also don't want to get overwhelmed with creativity. Work that I can't make well.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
I'm not doing a thing well, I'd rather not do it at all.
Yeah, makes sense. And what's your like, what keeps you in Ghana? Because I feel like, you know, as much as there's challenges here and stuff, but do you think there's something about the environment that keeps you here, or if you had a choice, you would leave?
Oh, I don't think I would like to leave, maybe permanently.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to travel
and
see, you know, some things I've always heard about. It's always nice when you go somewhere and see it for yourself.
Yeah.
You have like different experiences that just broadens your scope,
perspective,
gives you new ideas. But I will always love to come back to Ghana.
What keeps you in Ghana?
I think maybe I've not known life anywhere else to compare to the kind of experiences I've had. I mean, my family is here, my friends are here, all the Banku is here. Every time when I've traveled, maybe after a few weeks,
you're like, I need Banku and like, tilapia in my life.
I need to go back. Like, the world is not safe right now. I hear of all these hostilities. You know, let me go home where my life is at least is valued in some way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be someone's statistic.
Well, hopefully when we import water, we will not. That will not
you know, somebody has to be here to try and fix that. Well, imagine if we all left.
True. Yeah.
Then nobody will be here to speak about the Chinese anymore.
No, I mean, look, I'm here too. It's funny. I went on holiday a month ago, and I'm not going to lie, I found somewhere else I can live if I need to. but I feel like you're right. There's something about home, right?
There's something about
you're just like, can't really live without this place, you know?
Something. There's something here. The sense that you are somebody and you are seen.
Yeah.
You know, you could go somewhere.
Yes, because I think the experiences, especially as, like you were saying, you had to play the race card here. You don't necessarily have to do that.
Sometimes I have to, but not at that level.
Yeah. But you have to play the I'm not harassed, because you have dreads. So for people who don't know, do you ever get harassed by the police?
Not by the police, but last time I checked my bag in at the airport, and a lady asked me if I have a lighter in my bag. And then I waited to see what she would ask the next person, and she didn't ask the next person if he had a lighter. So I looked at her. But that day, I wasn't really happy, so I decided to just let her go. I didn't want to engage. But I get that a lot.
Because I know some of my friends who have dreads, and here they're like, the police. I'm surprised you didn't do anything about the Achimota.
At that time, I was suffering from COVID fatigue.
Oh, okay.
Like,
fair enough.
Mental.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really painting for a long time.
Mm.
I was doing more of reading.
Yeah.
And just trying
re-energizing
to,
in some way.
Come back, and I don't like saying I'm back, but
he's back.
Watch out,
Bright is back.
Have a few bombshells to drop.
Oh, I can't wait! So. Can you give us any kind of idea?
Oh, I'm working on a series right now that is focusing on the art ecosystem in Ghana.
Oh, wow!
And often I've looked at
that is going to be a bombshell,
and tried to ask questions about things going on there.
Uh-huh.
Now I think I want to look at the art space
scene,
and just
the creative,
you know,
scene.
Some of the things
I've seen.
Yeah,
because there's quite a few like stories and not scandals, but there's a few things that are kind of going on that maybe need to be documented in some way. That's so interesting.
So,
oh, I'm excited. You've given me vim. You've given me vim.
Somebody has to say it. So
my big mouth. You and your big mouth. Oh, that's good. Earlier this year, we also worked on the Malta Guinness project together. No, it wasn't this year. It was last year. The beginning of last year, we did the Malta Guinness Recognize competition together, which was fun.
Yes.
That was when, you know, Bright and I really bonded.
Over. We went to somewhere. No free adverts. We went somewhere.
He said no free adverts.
Frances took me somewhere, and she doesn't want to take me there anymore.
Took him for a nice lunch.
Hopefully.
Don't worry. We'll get a lunch.
We'll go there.
But yeah, so we did that, and that was a position for you to be a judge.
That was the...
Which is probably the first time.
Not really. But on that scale, yes. I actually went into the whole project wanting to participate too.
Yes.
I went there. I remember wanting you said to participate that. Because I thought it was such a wonderful opportunity.
So for people who don't know, in 2020, Malta Guinness did a, it was called the Malta Guinness Recognized Design Contest, and they had 9 people essentially compete to design their limited edition 30-year anniversary label. So Jamja was doing the coordination and putting all the event together, and Bright was one of the judges. But Bright kept saying, well, can I present my work as well? So as much as he was a judge, he also wanted to present
it. Was
his
it
work.
Was such a such a great opportunity, mm-hmm. because I was saying a lot of design houses would kill for such a gig,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for the brand to literally gift the opportunity to an up and coming designer, yeah. who
it was really
needed
good to
that
work.
Kind of break.
Yeah.
You know, I think it really positioned the brand in a very, very good way.
Good
and
way.
After that, I've seen a few other.
I've seen quite a few other brands
do
replicated.
Something similar, which is good. Which is good.
It's
this is
good.
The one thing that if someone emulates, I'm happy.
The one
thing.
Yeah,
I think
but
there are so many.
Can we just say though, as much as it's good and I love it, it's for me, it's about the execution of it. Because if you're going to copy, I always think if you're going to copy, then copy better.
They have the.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, copy better. Because when you copy and it's okay, it's so obvious that you copied.
Mm.
Do you get what I mean? And so for me, I saw it, I was like, oh, interesting.
Me, I was happy. You know, later when we have a lot more options,
we can filter and decide which one was better. Cool though for the designers. I think for design creatives, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity.
The more corporate institutions need to take this up because at the end of the day, it's for the good of their own brands.
But you know, and in a way that's supportive, I think, longer term too.
Yes.
You know, I think there's a way that it needs to be, how do I say, like continued for in some sort of way, whether it's another one or in a different way.
The state actually needs to pick this up because you see a lot of state-sanctioned designs that don't live up to the best quality that you know people are capable of producing. So the state needs to look at some of these examples and also float the opportunity so that
like genuinely and openly,
you know, again, it would put the state in a very positive,
yeah, true.
You know, but they won't listen to us.
No, because we're just creative.
They're just creative.
But they're easy to paint their bridge. Huh? You won't do that.
That's another challenge. You know, opportunities.
Yeah.
Need more.
So, in terms of, so we say Bright is back. Now, in terms of the continent, you've been to Cape Town.
Yes.
What other countries have you been to in Africa?
Nigeria.
Yeah. What was Nigeria like? Did you like it?
Yeah, I was at the maiden edition of Artex Lagos.
Oh, nice.
So, BC Silver, may she rest in peace, invited Anno Gallery. To participate in the maiden edition of Artex Lagos, which she was the director for. I had just received the Kunyanya Prize, and Nana Foyateyim was on the board, the jury board. So she asked if I'd be interested in showing some of my work in Lagos, and I was like, yeah, that is why I came here.
Yeah.
And we went to Lagos, and it was interesting. And this is just coming from the comments that BC herself made as like a review of the show. So it was an art fair. Galleries came on board to sell art. There was a certain idea of what kind of art was selling or would sell. So there was a lot of that kind of art. And then there was this young boy from Ghana who had something that was very, very simple, casual, but daring. And
it sold
like turned heads, got a lot of attention. I don't just say we were the best booth,
you
but
were
I mean,
the best
BC, booth. BC said it herself, so,
you were the
I
best
doubt
booth. claim it
But yeah, it was interesting because it was the most distinct mm-hmm. exhibit, mm-hmm. same as what I noticed in the artwork for the Queen Anne Prize. Mm-hmm. Like my piece was the most distinct mm-hmm. one. Like, mm-hmm. The one that you thought, what is this doing here?
Yeah. You know,
and that was actually what did the magic.
Nice.
So it was like that in Lagos.
You want to go back to Lagos contact. Soon?
I actually want to go back to Nigeria
yeah.
when I'm ready.
Yeah.
Maybe in 2 years.
Nice.
I have some work I would like to show in Nigeria.
Specifically in Nigeria. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Well, Bright, thank you very much. This has been a great sort of journey in your art world and getting all the details. And I can't wait to see what you've got planned for us. And guys, if you are not following Bright on Instagram, you must. He always drops his bombs first.
Yeah, exclusive. There. Exclusives on Instagram before he goes anywhere
else. So check it out on there. And thank you for listening to Palava Podcast.
I'm Frances Kwakupom, and you have been listening to the Palava Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your preferred platform. Thank you for listening to Palava. Pass it on.